hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the crack beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Last Thursday, there was an interesting meeting in Vancouver, British Columbia. It was a speech by two university professors, and it attracted, as you might expect, a certain amount of protest from the anti-free speech brigade, namely the Antifa. And this is a report by Tim Murray, a good friend of mine, and it's the report says, "The barbarians are at the gates. Free speech is under assault from anti-fascists." You don't fully comprehend the enormity and critical importance of the immigration issue in Canada until you've walked through an anti-fa gauntlet, felt their shoving, heard their deafening and robotic chants, and smelt the human feces they've left behind. Yeah, this is in Canada, believe it or not. If you don't believe me, just ask the almost 100 law-abiding, peaceful people who paid for a ticket to listen to a presentation at UBC, that's University of British Columbia, Wednesday evening, last week, October 9th. The talk was given by former University of New Brunswick professor Ricardo Duchesne and Mount Royal University professor Mark Hecht. In case you didn't know, Antifa is short for anti-fascists, which is what these hooligans fancy themselves as. It has to be the most inaccurate name of the century. Antifa followed their standard plan. They arrived early so some 20 to 30 of them could be in one place to block the entrance to the building where the talk was to occur. The ones blocking the door were all males. They dutifully conformed to the Antifa a dress coat, all wore black masks over their faces. Only their eyes were exposed. Two unmasked female Antifa protesters stood at another location. All were loudly chanting, "Fuck off, Nazi scum." Oh, that's a pretty, there's a pretty intellectual sign or a chant. And they have protests. It's protests against fascism protests. And there's a sign against fascism, a red fist smashing into a swastika. Never again means never again. All the males locked arms to prevent people from getting through the building's front door and into the room where the two professors were to speak. Some UBC, that's University of British Columbia, security personnel did try to escort people through the Antifa mob. However, the mob pushed and shoved as much as they could to delay or block anyone who wanted to enter the building. In doing so, they succeeded in intimidating many of the women ticket holders, an undetermined number left in fear. Now, that's, of course, part of what this is about. The door into the building led to a corridor which had doors into the lecture room where the talk was to occur. A number of windows were on both sides of the doors. The Antifa mob stood in front of the windows and pounded on them for close to 2 hours in an attempt to drown out the voices of the two professors addressing the group. Luckily, the sound of the pounding was muffled sufficiently to allow the two professors to be heard and to speak and to be heard. As Professor Heck began his speech, to the backdrop of pounding, he made an apt comment. "The barbarians are at the gate." Indeed. Just before that comment, Heck had smelled the stench, or more probably, human feces, that one of these righteous barbarians had no doubt planted. The smells was particularly strong for those who had unfortunately chosen seats that were closest to it. The feces could well serve as a symbol for the methods of this anti-fascist movement. And Tim Murray goes on to say, or add important points to consider. One, is it illegal to wear face masks at such events? Was Antifa's obstruction illegal? If the answer to both is yes, then the full weight of the law should descend on Antifa heads. UBC of buildings and land are public property, yet Antifa acted as if it owned the property and had the right to stop anyone from entering it. Now, that's absolutely right. Point two, why were the RCMP, that's Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and UBC, that's University of British Columbia Security, so unprepared and unable to bring in reinforcements? Antifa has acquired a solid and universal reputation for thuggery. Quite likely, Antifa was inspired by Canada's so-called anti-hate network, or Canadian anti-hate network, a recently minted clone of the corrupt U.S. Southern Poverty Law Center. That U.S. group provided the Canadian anti-hate network with startup funding. CON, that's our Canadian anti-hate network, its CEO and its UBC imitator, must be investigated. Tolerance of Antifa's outrageous conduct only whets Antifa's appetite for more. What should the University of British Columbia do now? UBC administrators have to make it clear that obstruction of events like that of Wednesday, October 9th, are not to be tolerated. That means that arrests have to be made when shameless obstruction happens. It does not mean that UBC should ban future talks. So-called hate speech needs a complete rethink. The answer to Antifa's obstruction of free speech is more speech. Professors Duchesne and Professor Ann Hecht have important contributions to make to Canadian society. The Antifa bullies do not. Who else has to be held to account? Here are some starters. Canada's education system, its cowardly and quisling political class, and many of its institutions, such as its disgracefully biased and quisling CBC, that's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and much of our mainstream media. These groups are lighter versions of Antifa, but they are still Antifa. All have cultivated and encouraged other versions of Antifa. All are in serious decay. Okay, a very well-written piece by Tim Murray. This is a little unusual. Immigration is a hot issue in ethnically diverse Surrey. Well, Surrey is one of the most third world ridings in Canada.
But,
ironically, some of the concerns about immigration that are our concerns seem to bother some of the immigrants there. This is an item from the from today's National Post. There's a long conversation at the beginning with one Harjit Singh Gill. He's the NDP candidate, and he's talking about a recent conversation entirely in Punjabi, the unofficial language of this riding of Surrey Newton. In this particular stretch of suburb on the outer edges of BC's lower mainland, most residents prefer Singh Gill's Punjabi election campaign to English. More than 60% of the residents in Surrey Newton are of South Asian descent. Most of them are Indian, or actually they're Sikhs. And most of are a host of other Filipinos, Latin Americans, and Chinese make it among the most ethnically diverse ridings in the country. And isn't it something that there are people who have the right to vote? That means they've had to have been here at least 5 years, got their citizenship, but they prefer the literature in Punjabi. Talk about integration. introduce the candidates. I'll skip over that, but all the candidates, incidentally, are East Indian, at least from the Liberals, Conservatives, and the Socialists, New Democrats. The Liberal candidate is Suk Dhaliwal, and not, that's his name. I'm not being funny. And the Conservative candidate is Harpreet Singh, and rising anxieties over surging crime rates in East Indian gangs, incidentally, and immigration. Voters in Surrey Newton are focused on many of the same issues, but frustrations over a recent influx of immigrant workers in the area, exacerbated in part by shady consultants who charge a fee to recruit new laborers, have begun to dominate discussions on the sidelines of sporting events and at family gatherings. So even the immigrants are concerned about Canada's failed immigration policies. New consultancy firms, many unauthorized, have sprung up so rapidly that the immigration industry is now among the most prominent in the city, after real estate and accounting. Yeah, these are many of them shady fly-by-night outfits that charge fortunes that help bring in by hook or by crook people, almost all of them from the Indian subcontinent. Quote, if you go four blocks down, there's about 200 consultants in that complex, says Neera Agnihotri, owner of Agnihotri Immigration Consultant, as she gestures out the window of her second story office space along a busy commercial street. For outfits like Agnihotri, the abundance of unlicensed consultants in recent years has stolen away would-be clients, shrinking the market shares of brokers such as herself. Agnihotri describes a meeting she had just hours earlier where a banker joked that he was in the wrong business. Immigration consulting is where the real dough is. Yeah, and isn't it? But what is the matter with our government officials? A lengthy report by the Globe and Mail uncovered consultancy firms charging applicants tens of thousands of dollars for work permits, particularly in BC neighborhoods near the US border. So they arrange, and it's not always done honestly, a work permit. And to get that permit, they have to create an impression that There's no Canadian who can do the job. And this is done in many cases absolutely fraudulent. Because we have officially 5.6% unemployment, real unemployment probably over 10%. So there, it's hard to imagine many, if even any, jobs which no Canadian can be found prepared to do. The thing is, prepared to do at maybe the minimum wage. Agne Hotry has heard of immigrants being charged as much as $80,000 to secure labor market impact assessments, a type of work permit. Yeah, labor impact, labor market impact assessment basically is a certificate stating that no Canadian can be found to do this job, and therefore this worthy immigrant from, or this worthy potential immigrant from the Punjab is just the just what we need. And it's also sick. Policy-wise, the government needs to wake up to this. This is, and she's an East Indian consultant. She says there's a problem. We need much stricter penalties and sanctions put in place. Yeah, stricter penalties, like anybody who gets in fraudulently, should be deported. Never mind, well, it was somebody else's fault. They didn't really know what was going on. They were only just a poor immigrant who paid a fortune. You're like, why would you pay a fortune to obtain what, if you're legitimate, you can obtain for a mere application fee? Why? Because they're all in on the scam. They know it's illegal. They know what they're asking for. What they're seeking is corrupt. But they come from corrupt countries where you get ahead by, yeah, that's right, greasing somebody's paw. And to the extent that this is tolerated, and is tolerated, it simply encourages them to do more of this. In an interview, Dhaliwal, he's the Liberal, says he's addressed voter concerns. He talks about other matters. Other voters say rapid immigration rates and a shortage of available jobs have caused an increase in gang affiliation. What do you mean gang affiliation? You mean gang membership? Lack of jobs. Well, among young people, I mean, that's among East Indian young people. A surge in violence in recent years has reached the point that the city decided to actually stop dealing with the RCMP and wants to create its own police force. And that actually makes some sense. But a part of the Conservatives' platform, this fellow Singh, has put forward a tough-on-crime agenda that includes a party promise to enforce longer jail sentences for criminals. Well, actually, for gun-using criminals, to be quite specific. As for immigration, he says Ottawa needs to introduce tougher policies that would crack down on immigration consultancy firms and increase penalties for perpetrators. Yeah, and the best penalty of all is anybody who comes in this way illegally, who scams the system, gets deported. You're gone. You're finished. You're out of here. So you're out your $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 that you paid to bribe through an immigration consultancy, and you're back home in India, and you'll never get a chance to come back to Canada. That's what the penalty ought to be. Even the NDP candidate says that he would call for an inquiry into the surge of consultancy firms that target and recruit vulnerable immigrants. They're not targeting vulnerable immigrants. They're enabling scamsters. You don't have to pay a bribe to come to Canada. If you qualify for the price of an immigration application, you get in. These people are equally, both the criminal consultancy outfits and the immigrants who come in that way,
are culpable and should be punished
and deported. And then there's some other problem. Nearby, the owner of the company hosting an event, Harjinder Dhaliwal, says his 24-year-old daughter was forced to study overseas in Ireland rather than in Canada, and he blames it on increased enrollment of foreign students. Our kids are not getting in because so many visitors are coming here from other destinations. Well, I think that's a valid issue and a valid concern. Let me see here. Who else got dumped? We don't know what the reasons were. I'll find out for the next show. Oh, yes. My gosh. She's coming to Canada. We are all on the edge of our seats. Activist Thunberg to visit Alberta after needed rest. Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg, she's all of 16, has announced that she's going to Alberta. The 16-year-old tweeted that she'll be heading north following a few days of well-needed rest while enjoying the spectacular nature of Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana. She did not say when she will be arriving in Alberta or where specifically she'll visit. Last week at a rally in South Dakota, Thunberg spoke out against the proposed path of the Keystone XL pipeline, which would carry crude oil from Alberta through Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska to refineries on the Gulf Coast. Now, this XL pipeline has taken a tremendous amount of time, which is incredibly costly. The Obama administration obstructed it for years. Finally, of course, when he took over, Donald Trump approved it. There have been further attempts to delay it. But it's vital to Alberta's interests. Now, this preachy little Swede, now, she'd been away from school for at least a month. You know, first she crossed the Atlantic in some boat that didn't use any carbon energy, or to generate any carbon energy. Then she was at the, she was at the United Nations, preaching at them, and she was, I think, before a committee of the United States Congress. Then she was up in Ottawa a couple of weeks, as Fridays ago, that there was the strike for climate change. I laughed. That's actually not such a laugh. A strike, well, that's usually a labor action where workers withhold their labor as part of usually a contract dispute. Well, students aren't withholding their labor. They're not laborers. They're students. And when they play hooky, essentially, often with the connivance of the boards of education and their teachers, or some of their teachers, that's not a strike. It's just playing hooky. It's a waste of the taxpayers' money. We're paying for the institution. They're not in it. They should be. Well, old Greta, or I shouldn't say old Greta, they're young Greta. She was at all these events, and then apparently she's taken a few days off for much needed rest, the little dear. And now she's on her way, supposedly on her way to Canada, to Alberta. Well, I hope they give her a good old Alberta welcome and a good taste of the raspberries, or actually what she needs. And I guess I've got to be careful always say this. She really needs some authority figure to put her over his knee and give her bottom a good spanking. I mean that. This girl is out of control. She is. Absolutely out of control. She should be in school. And I see her parents, if not, she supposedly radicalized them. My guess is it's the other way around. But whether she did it to them, she was what, 11 at the time she got the environmentalist bug.
whether it was indeed she who radicalized them or she or they who radicalized her, they're the parents. They're the ones responsible. And they should be spanked for not insisting that the little delinquents stay in school. Anyway, I think what she really needs is some authority figure to put her over his knee and give her a good paddling. And once she starts crying, she'll perhaps decide, I'll be good from now on. I'll go back to school. Yeah, she's 16. She ought to be in school. But she is certainly being used by powerful other forces for their own ends. You know, this junior humorless, she'd like to think of herself, I suppose, as some sort of non-religious Joan of Arc of the environmentalist movement. She's nothing of the sort. She's a pampered, indulged, a little shrieker, humorless, rude, and she's extremely rude, lecturing her betters, even lecturing the trust fund kid, Justin Trudeau, saying he hadn't done enough for the environment. None of what she says is new. She's simply parroting a party line that's been fed to her. So it's not as though she's... And I'm very sensitive to the fact. At any age, we can have insights. So just because somebody is 16 doesn't mean that her understanding of the world is necessarily wrong or should be ignored. Not at all. But I think it's equally valid to say that I don't think she has a whole lot to teach us. And what she's saying is not new. It's not profound. She doesn't have a profound insight. It's not something that she has come up with on her own. And you know, we all listen to her. Not at all. She really has very little to offer, except a strident voice and the seeming readiness of people in the mass media to pay attention to her. And that in some ways is really sad, that has become the case. I think you could quite validly say, quite frankly, what does Greta have to offer us? I mean, why should we listen to what she has to say? Well, why should anybody care? Okay, well, on Saturday, there was a big event, a big rally, liberal rally in Mississauga, which is a city just west of Toronto. And Trudeau, the trust fund kid, was very late, and when he came, he showed up in a bulletproof vest, and there was really quite a lot of drama. I'm going to read a story about it from the National Post. Suddenly, the warning that somebody's going to get shot doesn't sound so preposterous. Now, earlier this year, the then head of the Privy Council, Michael Wernick, was testifying to a Commons Justice Committee about a completely different matter. This is about the matter of the then Justice Minister Judy Wilson-Raybould, who complained of pressure being brought to bear on her to give a sweetheart deal to one of the Quebec engineering firms, SNC-Lavalin, which was up on corruption charges. Anyway, she resisted that and heard a lot about it from the Prime Minister's office and so on, and she said basically this pressure was improper, and I think it was. Anyway, the clerk of the Privy Council was to testify,
and he's the, would be the chief civil service servant. was basically to testify about that matter, but before he got to do so, he just broke into a complete rant about how dangerous Canadian politics has become in the upcoming election. There could be assassinations. People wondered, is the guy on crack? I mean, nobody been talking about assassinating anybody. But anyway, here's the National Post story. The admonition about the danger of assassination was dismissed as hyperbole. But the events in Mississauga this past Saturday night, where Justin Trudeau emerged 90 minutes late for a mass rally wearing a protective vest, have borne him out. Now, have they? Or is this dram of a desperate prime minister facing a big setback, we think, next Monday in the federal election? The election that has been about nothing was in danger of becoming about everything. Trudeau was due to take the stage at 5 p.m. to speak to the biggest Liberal rally yet in front of 30 candidates and about 2,000 supporters. After an hour, the Liberal leader had still not appeared and the crowd was getting restless. Local MP Navdeep Bains, the Mississauga Malton MP, was host for the evening. And he started in on another anecdote about how great it is to be Canadian before being shouted down by his own supporters. No, they were bored. Oh, the drama gets even better. Another local MP, Omar Al-Jabra. We call him Abracadabra, but anyway, Omar Al-Jabra, he's from Saudi Arabia, admitted that he was filling time and started up a listless chant of 4 more years that petered out quickly. It was clear that something was badly wrong. Trudeau finally emerged 90 minutes late and launched into his stump speech. But his embargoed remarks had him thanking his wife Sophie for introducing him, but she was nowhere to be seen. What was visible was a handful of large men wearing green shirts, sporting backpacks, in which there were weapons, obviously, arranged in protective phalanx around the Liberal leader. Officials said there were members of the RCMP tactical unit, and they'd been with Trudeau at certain events in the campaign. Anyway, apparently there was a big risk assessment. There was a big risk, or a risk, to him, which of course raises the question why he's all surrounded by these bodyguards. But if there is a risk, there's also a risk of people among the 2,000 that are being shot, right? Well, anyway, the event went ahead. There's so much of this doesn't make any sense. If they felt the risk was present there, well, why didn't they simply go and extract the risk, whoever it was? And this is back in the spring. Wernick warned the Commons Justice Committee earlier this year of the rising tide of incitement to violence, where people use terms like treason or traitor in open discussions. These are words that lead to assassination. Well, really? Really? I think when Wernick made those comments, I responded at the time that I didn't think those terms were absolutely over the top. That they're not very polite. I agree, and I don't think they should be used lightly. Just because you disagree with somebody of a different political stripe doesn't make him a traitor. But certainly on the immigration front, the present government is embarked on a cold-blooded replacement as fast as they can of the European founding settler people. And Trudeau has expressed his contempt, at least as far back as 2015, of old stock Canadians. In fact, when the former Prime Minister Stephen Harper used that term, Trudeau was extremely critical and dismissive. He found that offensive. And when Trudeau was challenged in the summer of 2018 by a French-Canadian woman at a
meeting in Quebec, and she challenged him about his illegals pouring across the border and the over $100 million that it cost the Quebec government to care for and house these people. And when she demanded to know when he would be paying Quebec back for that, and he dismissed her as a racist, and she persisted and asked him what he offered, the Québécois de souche, which literally means Quebecers of the stump, really it's old stalwart, you know, they come right out, you know, they're tied right to the earth. They're the original founding settler people of Quebec. He said, you have no place in this country, madam. Think about it. A woman whose roots, like my own on my mother's side, go back over 300 years, has no place in his country, and yet some jiving illegal from Nigeria or Haiti who skips across the border illegally and immediately starts mooching off the public tit does? It's grotesque. I don't think the term traitor or treason is too strong. But anyway, just a sidebar there. The casual search on Twitter reveals how dire things have become. The hashtag Traitor Trudeau is an open sewer of conspiracy, the type of things that Christopher Hitchens, who's a leftist, described as the exhaust fumes of democracy. An open sewer of conspiracy. Well, I'm not somebody who dismisses unusual explanations that may involve a conspiracy as necessarily wrong. Not all alleged conspiracies are, in fact, that. Not all events happen because they were planned, because of some conspiracy. But when you look at, let's just say, the immigration policies in this country, it's inescapable that that's exactly what's going on. There is an agreement among the globalists in the West, going back almost 100 years to the evil writings of and plans of Richard Count Coudenhove-Kalergi in Austria. He's the one who dreamed up the European Union, and it was sold deceptively and erroneously to people for several decades as an economic, or as greater economic cooperation, not at first not even a union, but greater economic cooperation, fewer trade barriers and mobility barriers and so on. Well, if that's all it were, then you know, perhaps it wasn't all that objectionable. I mean, it seems relatively benign. You know, wouldn't it be better for neighboring nations in Europe to cooperate and to trade rather than to, you know, go to war? If that's all it were, not necessarily a bad idea. But that's not all it was. And Coudenhove-Kalergi made it quite clear in his 1922 book, Practical Idealism, what the end goal was. A new European man, the European of the future, he said, would be mixed race, a combination of black and oriental, and would look like, and he thought, and I suggested what would not have been the case, but like the ancient Egyptians. And there would be a new moral elite who would be Jewish. So a largely Jewish elite ruling a mixed-race Europe. Now, how would that come about? Well, he didn't exactly say. And it wouldn't be obvious for a while, not until the 60s, when there began to be more and more third world immigration. And now, of course, it's the party line. Look at what that horrible woman, Angela Merkel, did to Germany in 2015. She allowed in over a million Middle Easterners, third worlders, now not just Middle Easterners. And that's the official policy of France, people like Emmanuel Macron, and many of the other EU leaders, that the mass invasion of Europe is enabled, encouraged, and on the, some of the more recalcitrant EU members like Hungary and Poland and Bulgaria and Romania, they're trying to force it on them. Like it or not, your countries will be changed. This is the Kuttenhove-Kalergi plan, because you will never get this new European man and an end to nationalities, no more Spanish, no more French, no more Italian, no more British, no more German. You won't get that until you actually replace the population through immigration. That's the plan. That's what's being done. That's not a conspiracy theory. That is what the plan was set out as, and that's what's being done. There
clearly is a lot of pushback, and whether or not there was some nutter in the audience, who apparently they didn't arrest, or whether this was just drama, and I certainly would not put it past the Prime Minister, and I certainly would not put it past the left in this country, who are past masters at exactly this type of drama. Oh, it's so dangerous to be a leftist. Oh, it's so dangerous to be anti-racist. Now, they're the thugs, but they are always pretending that their very existence is in danger. Well, this is Paul Frum. Let's have a slightly more upbeat topic. I'd like to change pace here and have some tunes by a great country and western singer. He brought the California or Bakersfield sound to Nashville in the 1960s. This is a great entertainer, the late Buck Owens and his Buckaroos. And I have a few tunes by Buck.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna live here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Love's gonna live here again. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna singing. Love's gonna live here again. I hear bees humming and I know the days are coming. Love's gonna live here again. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna
Thank you.
dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a
West, you know I will stand the test.
This is Paul. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those Eastern Standard Time. My sign off tonight, as I always do, with the end of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf forever.
In days of yore, prison shore, would that our blessed hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle shamrock rose and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home.